G&D on the Fan, one more chance to win Caps tickets today in a little over 45 minutes at the end of the hour coming up about 10 till. We're sponsored exclusively by Kondori and Murad. That's the law firm, our buddies, estate planning, elder law, real estate transactions, probate administration. Meet with their attorneys and schedule a consultation. You can go do that at kmlawyers.com. Tell them we sent you. They'll give you a discount. That's kmlawyers.com. Breaking news out of the NFL just within the last literally 2 minutes here. The Ravens are releasing kicker Justin Tucker. They have made the announcement. He, of course, has been accused of inappropriate behavior by 16 massage therapists from 8 different Baltimore spas and wellness centers. He will go down for his time in Baltimore as the best kicker in team history and one of the best kickers in league history. 8 All-Pros, 7 Pro Bowls, All-Decades team in the 2010s, longest field goal in NFL history, highest career field goal percentage in NFL history at 89% among kickers that have at least 100 attempts. I would think he'll kick in the league again, but I guess now we got to wait and see what's found out, because the Ravens wouldn't have cut him if they didn't see something they didn't like.
You wouldn't think, right? I mean, they're doing their due diligence. Maybe they found something.
All right, let's go to the guest hotline right now. It is the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. Eric Edholm of NFL Media, NFL.com, joins us now. Eric, forgive us for starting with Justin Tucker, but the news just broke.
Sure.
What do you make of the Ravens releasing him? And do you think someone rolls the dice and takes a chance on him, or is it too early to say that?
Yeah, no problem on the Tucker question. I saw it right as you guys were calling me. So, you know, I've had a couple minutes to thinking about it, but really had a while to think about it because, you know, during the draft, they took Tyler Loop, the kicker, and just sort of felt like that was the precursor to letting Tucker go. I don't know the timing on any of this stuff. I don't know if there was some discovery, you know, during their investigative process and what they were doing in-house about, you know, trying to, you know, determine the, you know, not only the severity of these accusations, but the accuracy of them and whatever they could determine that the authorities couldn't. But yeah, I just sort of felt like that was the first move. You know, you draft the kicker and then you release the guy who's been accused of some bad stuff. So as for whether he kicks again in the league, I mean, I think you guys are right. I would think there's gotta be some kind of clearing of these charges or something. I don't know whether it's hard to have
that press conference.
Yeah.
Where you're bringing him in right now.
I know.
But the questions that are looming, I should point out, I don't want to cut you off, but I'll tag you back in.
No, it's fine.
I just saw this from Schefter. Adam Schefter is tweeting that he's told by the team they're still insisting this is a football decision. You mentioned drafting Tyler Loop.
So he had his worst season of his career this past year.
Yeah, he missed
35.
8 field goals. Yeah. He was 22 of 30. And in fact, there were people, and I say there were people, I was one of them, who at different points said, you can't keep standing by this guy. And I don't even mean based on the trouble. I mean, he was missing so many kicks. They're a really good team. You felt like he was going to cost them. So they're at least saying this is about the on-field product. I still think he'd be there, and they wouldn't have drafted a kicker if not for what happened off the field. But that's not the song they're singing.
We'd seen a little bit of a drop-off coming into last season, but then there was that stretch where, you know, he was missing extra points and the 50-yarders that he was so known for that looked like layups back in, you know, at one point in his career were becoming pretty labored. And, you know, they lost that game to Pittsburgh and a couple others just by virtue of his misses. And they stood by him then during, you know, when they were losing all these games and they were finding themselves, you know, swimming upstream a little bit, even if they knew they had a good football team. So, I mean, judge it how you will, but they stuck by him when he was struggling, when we didn't know these charges existed or didn't know these allegations were out there. And then once they came to light, he kind of straightened things out a little bit by the end of the year. So, yeah, kind of a complicated, ugly thing.
Eric Edholm with us here on Grant and Danny. Let's get to the power rankings, which are always fun fodder. You know, you got probably dozens of cities that are butthurt, angry at you in your mentions, a couple other places who think you're a genius. But go through it for us. No brainer to me to have the Eagles up at the top. They're, you know, they seem to always somehow find that guy in the draft that everybody should have taken but didn't. So they're number one. After that, does it get murky for you, or is it pretty clear cut?
Yeah, no, I mean, I kind of looked at it like almost like quartiles. You know, there's a top eight, a second eight, a third group, and then the last 8, and you just sort of do your best to try to get these. And obviously I look at the Vegas win totals and I look at what teams have done in the off season, and we're about to have the schedule release. We obviously know who teams are playing, so you have an idea of how strong or weak a schedule is, even without knowing the order of the games and all that stuff. So I, you know, I mix it through the spin cycle. It's a very scientific process, and see what I come up with. So obviously last year, fresh in our minds, you know, we have teams at the top that have had pattern histories of success. And then we have the new kids on the block, like the Commanders. So there's always that fear. Remember a year ago, you know, the same breadth of conversation we're having with Washington as kind of the breakthrough team last year. We had the same conversation with Houston, and they had a very strange year. I mean, they were competitive in a bad division. They outlasted everybody, didn't look great in the process, and then, you know, looked pretty good in two playoff games. So, you know, what to make of them? And it was a up and down year. That kind of thing can happen for a team like the Commanders, but I don't try to overly penalize people for our teams for things that haven't happened yet, or you don't know. It's I wouldn't say it's clear cut, but there was a cutoff line, I felt like, at some point, maybe around 8 or 9, somewhere around Green Bay.
Eric Edholm of NFL Media. I had asked this question to callers last segment. I want to ask it directly to you. Is the reverence for Washington, and it's not just you, because Danny and I went through your rankings and said 6, it's just, we're not used to it. It feels high, right? But then we go,
yeah, right.
Well, we like them better than we like the team you listed 7, Tampa, or the Rams at 8, or the Packers at 9, what have you. So, yeah, maybe they're 6. But is that a Jaden Daniels endorsement or a Commanders endorsement? And maybe the point is they don't need to be separate. But I feel right. Like they're in the club now. Like I always say, the Bills are going to be in the AFC Championship game mix because of Josh Allen every year. The Chiefs, yep, with Mahomes. Are we saying that about the Commanders because of Daniels? And is it too soon after just 1 year to say that?
Yeah, that's a fair question. And in fact, just to kind of extend that example from before, I mean, I don't think it was crazy a year ago to suggest that C.J. Stroud played at a very comparable level. You know, that his, you know, rookies just don't avoid interceptions very often, right? That's something that both guys were able to do pretty well last year. I would say even, you know, Stroud had fewer, I think, than Jaden did. But still, I mean, the poise was off the charts. And so, you know, maybe after last year, even with bad protection, we knocked Stroud down a little bit, but he's still got that level of respect that I think puts him up or near the top. And I don't know that he can drag the Texans up the same way that maybe Jaden could do it with the Commanders, but maybe, you know, I mean, who knows? So it's just a reminder that, like, you can do it, but you may be out in front just a little bit. And teams are going to be diving into the tape, especially with a guy who's got a tough style to prepare for, right? And I'm sure people have been doing the same exercise with Lamar for years and bashing their heads against the wall as they do it. But, you know, there will be coaches out there who have spent a good chunk of their offseason devising ways to short circuit this kid. So yes, it's an endorsement of him for sure. And Dan Quinn as well. And a roster that looks so much better than it did, you know, 13 months ago, whatever. So it's been impressive to see how they really put this thing together. I think it's a team thing, but Jaden certainly is the big beacon out in front.
Eric, let me ask you about what team from, I guess it might be your second quartile, possibly your third quartile. I'm not sure how your quartiles are divvied up. it's our SAT word we didn't know we were going to have on this program today. But give me somebody that's kind of arrow trending up that could end up maybe where Washington is now. I'm thinking of a team like Cincinnati, if they had like one defender, might have won 12 games last year. Or Denver with some of the arrow trending up. Give me somebody that could jump up to where maybe Washington is.
Yeah, and this is somewhere where you look back last year and, you know, the Eagles technically played an easy schedule. So did the Commanders. You know, I mean, you have to weigh those kind of things in, and you look at some of the tougher schedules and you say, wow, you know, the Bengals, it feels like for a number of years now, have played a really tough schedule. That's something that you can't, you know, you have to factor in into what they did. So, you know, there's probably, I would say that, in that next group, and I'm just kind of going down as I look here, there's probably like, you know, for every Minnesota Vikings team that you can see losing more games than they did last year, there's a team like Denver who, maybe I didn't love their draft and didn't think they'd exactly got what they needed, but still think this is a team that is gunning for a Chiefs team that, boy, I mean, you keep looking at the numbers last year. I think they outscored their opponents by 50 points and still won as many games as they did. And every week felt like a nail biter. How long is that sustainable for? I know they're the Chiefs. I know they've earned their flowers, but you know, I could see Denver stealing a win or two. They should have beat them in Arrowhead last year, things like that. Maybe those wins start coming this year. So just keep an eye on them. I mean, with that defense and Sean Payton and Bo Nix in his second season and the whole bit, I could see them being – and Tampa Bay, too. I don't remember exactly where I had them. But, man, the Bucs offense should be fantastic. And that division has a lot of question marks. I think they're going to win a lot of football games.
I told Danny earlier in the show, I think the Patriots are a big-time sleeper this year for kind of that renaissance team of the Texans 2 years ago, Washington this year. So I want to get your thoughts. You have them 25th. That's about where they should be ranked. I mean, you could rank them there and also still say, yeah, they could have an amazing year. But if you look at their new starters in free agency, Diggs, Matt Collins, Garrett Bradbury, Morgan Moses on offense, and they drafted Will Campbell at tackle. On defense, they did even better work. Milton Williams up front, Harold Landry off the edge, Robert Spillane at linebacker, Carlton Davis in the secondary. I just think there's a lot more there now than 1 year ago, and I love their coaching staff they put together with Vrabel. Could they be a surprise team?
And doesn't that offseason that you just kind of described right there feel a lot like what, you know, Adam Peters did a year ago? The only difference being they got May a year ago, and now he's in his second season. So, yeah, they attacked, you know, they added competition everywhere. They upgraded. Obviously, Jared Mayo had 1 year. We didn't really get to see him that much. But from all outward appearances, I would say that Vrabel is going to be a good injection of life to that locker room. And so, you know, some of the receivers do anything, and they've upgraded the offensive line. I mean, it could be very well in the cards. Their schedule is very favorable too. You know, you look at who they play and who they get at home versus away. I mean, some of their tougher games are at home. That's not bad, right? And the road schedule is pretty manageable. So there's definitely, and this is about where I had the Commanders last year. I think I had them like 26th or something. And people thought I was being a little too aggressive at that point. I mean, that's kind of what I'm seeing with New England is that, you know, type of, you know, Dan Quinn came in, changed the culture. I think Mike Vrabel can do the same thing in New England.
Eric, we haven't talked much about this, but just want your reaction. We're pretty pumped here in D.C. today. The draft is coming here in a couple of years.
Yeah.
So what have you made of the sort of the traveling spectacle road show? Just what are your thoughts on the nation's capital getting the offseason showcase?
Yeah, I guess I have to think about how many different cities. I didn't go this year to Green Bay, which is crazy because I live about 3 hours away. There was a reason why. But I've been to more, you know, Kansas City was terrific. It had a really good setup. Detroit was wild. I mean, it was really big scene. So, you know, what you think about immediately is the logistics of it. The one thing that really hurt for me with Detroit was trying to walk anywhere. They had about 19 block perimeter set up, and you had to go through a certain entrance if you were media and certain entrance if you were fans, and it made for a very long haul. But so whenever I hear about a draft, a city coming to a draft and or vice versa, whatever, draft coming to a city, you think, is it set up for this kind of thing? And it, from all sounds of it, you know, like Green Bay was perfect because it's such a small place and you can move around pretty easily, but it'll be a different story in D.C. Obviously, there's no more dramatic backdrop than that one, and obviously all the historical buildings there, I think, will add a different kind of flair to it. And so, yeah, I mean, it really is neat. I remember going to my first draft in New York and then later in Chicago and thinking, how is the draft going to be exciting? But they really do put as much as they possibly can into the fan experience, and they've learned a lot over the last 10 years.
Eric Edholm of NFL Media. How about Shedeur Sanders' fall? What do you blame is maybe the wrong word. Why did that happen?
I think it's a lot of different factors. I think him not having an agent and having, you know, a lot of people in his corner saying, like, you know, you're the man, you need to be picky about where you're going and all this stuff. I think it may have ended up being the wrong approach. I think an agent sometimes can smell these things and see these things coming and say, look, teams are going to be turned off by this. That was some of the feedback I got was that it felt like Shadur was wanting to be wooed as opposed to, you know, doing the wooing himself. And look, I don't know how it's supposed to work or how it should work. I just know how teams typically look at these things, and that could be a turnoff. And the reality is there were only about probably 7 or 8 teams that realistically made sense for him anyway in the draft. Like teams that were committed to drafting a quarterback, willing to use resources to do it, had the picks, blah, blah, blah. So the field was already kind of slim to begin with. And once the Giants went with Jackson Dart and the Browns went with Dylan Gabriel, it was like, wow, okay, what's happening here? So I think he got hurt by the process a little bit. His talent to me suggests he should have been a top 50 pick. It just, you know, it was an unusual situation. And the fact that he ended up in Cleveland made it even stranger. So I don't know how it's going to end up, but man, if there's a spot where I think he could win that job, it's probably there. So crazy how it worked out.
Quick thought, you know, the old school football guys that want to tell me about running the ball and establishing the run and stopping the run and everything's about that, and then we can do everything else, we're loving this draft this year. I think it was like 18 or 19 of the first round picks were trench guys, whether it's offense, yeah, offense on the defensive line. Is that just this year? Are we kind of seeing a theme start to develop about, you know, we had all the passing numbers video game style a few years ago. Now everybody's playing shells. Are we seeing sort of a response to the response, which is now responding?
Absolutely. And I said it, you know, I think I even said it at the height of the passing era, you know, in 2011 or whatever, when we were, you know, when, you know, the fifth leading passer in the NFL had 5,000 yards, right? At some point, the run game is going to cycle back into the league. There's no way it can't, because you go so far in one direction, one person's willing to start going against the grain, then everybody follows. And I think that's, and some of it is the quarterback run game too. You know, obviously teams are more open to having a Jaden Daniels do his thing and whatnot. That's becoming more common. So, yeah, I mean, you start putting dime defenses out there, light fronts, pass rushing fronts. Teams are going to load up with 12 personnel and unbalanced lines and big backs, and let's see you stop it. And that's hard to do. So, yeah, I think with the Barkley and move and all the free agency moves, Derrick Henry and Josh Jacobs, you know, Bucky Irving down in Tampa was a great draft pick and other ones. So, you know, we're seeing that now with the backs and tight ends and offensive linemen and defensive linemen all went at the top of this draft. And part of it was also the talent that was available.
Eric, lovely information and rankings for the Commanders. We're all about them being sixth on the power ranking. So for all of those people yelling at you, we're the opposite of that. Thank you for joining us.
I appreciate it.
Thank you, buddy.
So kind of you guys. Thank you.
We can't miss today. We got a new stadium, hopefully. We got the NFL draft coming. Jaden Daniels has things looking up. We're in a good mood.
Right, put him in a bubble, and we'll see you in August.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, seriously. Is that the truth? Eric Edholm of NFL Media with us here on Grant and Danny. You're listening to The Fan. Let's do this next. We've got another chance for somebody to win Caps tickets. Final time today coming up in like 33 minutes. So make sure you're listening then. But we have not talked Caps Canes. The series starts tomorrow. How do you feel about the matchup with Carolina? Let's get into that next. 800-636-1067 is the number. 800-636-1067. The Caps are underdogs. Carolina's becoming a heavier favorite as we get closer to the series. You okay with that? And what do you think the series will come down to? We'll preview it next. Caps playoff coverage on The Fan, brought to you by Ace Trim Carpentry. For over 25 years, Ace Trim's been a trusted trade partner for new home builders in the DMV. They specialize in full-service interior trim carpentry, handling everything from supply to installation, turnkey, hassle-free. Contact acetrim.com today. Ace Trim, the home builder's trade partner. We will hit the phones with you in a moment. This is the first chance you've had on the show to weigh in on the series with Carolina. Your thoughts, your expectation for the Caps in round two. So Caps fans, line them up at 800-636-1067. We'll be coming to you in just a moment. Danny, after being heavy favorites in round one, the Caps are now sizable underdogs.
They are.
Going into round two, they have home ice advantage. Games one and two tomorrow night, Thursday night at home. By the way, we'll be at City Tap House, a couple blocks from the arena, ahead of the game on both Tuesday and Thursday. John Walton of Caps Radio fame is going to be live with us on site at 3 o'clock tomorrow, so you can come on by and kick it with us and JW if you want to. But Danny, what is your gut feel going into this series?
I don't feel great. This to me is the kryptonite. This to me is the weakness or the Achilles heel, whatever you want to use, of the Capitals roster construction, playing style, age, experience, and everything else. It's not necessarily unbelievable dynamic offensive creativity. There are teams that are more prolific in terms of scoring goals or creating chances, or high quality chances rather. It's that. The thing I always talk about, I just call it speed. It's not. It's the relentless use of the speed. It's not just open ice where, you know, two guys racing for a puck. One out of every three games, you see that someone trying to prevent an icing or something like that. It's not what I'm talking about. It's there's never any room or time. It's the pressure. And the pressure never, ever stops. And they get momentum back and the ice gets tilted and the Capitals have that long-standing playoff thing where they can't get the puck out of their own zone, and then those goals feel inevitable, right? Where they're just constantly peppering you, poking at your wall and at your defense. So to me, they're pretty good. B, they play this Brendan Moore style of taking on his persona, I think as good as any team around, and he's willing to be the bad guy, kind of play that Tortorella role and say inflammatory things that supports his team and pisses off the opponents and their fans, etc. They're going to agitate. They're going to be a pain in the butt. This, to me, is kind of the thing that I'm afraid of when I think about the Capitals, is this group.
So the Caps this year scored 14 more goals than did Carolina. They allowed 7 fewer goals. They were better offensively. They were better on the defensive end of the ice. They got better goaltending statistically. So kind of in all of those areas, they were better. You go, why is Carolina so heavily favored? And the answer is that the deeper numbers, the peripheral, what we could call analytics or deep dive kind of nerd numbers in hockey, suggest that Carolina is the better team. If you look at things like expected goals this season, the highest in the NHL for Carolina, right at about 55.5% of goals scored in their games. Should have had a 55-45 edge. The Capitals, as an example, were 50.5%, a little under 51%. If you look at that shot attempts for Corsi, similarly, Carolina, 59% of shot attempts in their games, 41 for opponents. The Caps were almost dead even at 50-50. So Carolina is going to control the puck a little bit more. They're going to shoot the puck more often than the Capitals do in this series, which requires really good goaltending, obviously. And then if you look at the actual playoffs, which maybe are more relevant than the regular season, although it's hard after just one round because you don't know how much of it is the opponent or the matchup, what have you. The Hurricanes, 36.6 shots per game in the first round. Led all NHL teams in the first round of the postseason. So Logan Thompson's going to have his work cut out for him. On top of that, they're better on special teams, in my opinion, than Washington. Their power play ranks 5th among playoff teams. Their penalty kill is number 1. They killed all 15 opportunities against the power play against Ottawa in the first round. Now the Caps, with Ovi from his office, have a better power play, obviously, so that bodes well. But they're an elite penalty-killing team. They were the best in the sport all year. They're pretty good, I think, as well on the power play. And you've mentioned the speed. The Caps are like faster than, you know, you like to call them heavy, and they are. They happen to be both right now. They're both fast, where they have a lot of guys who can skate. Bevilier on the top line can fly. Second line, McMichael can skate with anybody on Carolina. Even Wilson and Dubois, for their size, are very, very good skaters. They can move well, yeah. Mangiapane can skate. Ryan Leonard can fly. And then on the fourth line, a little bit less so for Duhaime and Dowd. But right now, Protas has been on the fourth line. What an amazing transition he's made from just a big guy who's not very good on his edges and doesn't skate well to now someone who's got some decent speed. So up and down the lineup, they're a great combination of size, heavy, what they like to be, and also just a lot faster. The Bevilier trade has really helped them.
Especially that with regard. That speed, yeah.
Like him and Strom on the top line now working in unison. Those guys can skate, right? So they've got that up and down. But Carolina is going to present problems with their speed, with their skating ability. And where I worry about this series is if Washington can't stay out of the box. They took too many penalties for my liking and even got out of their own game and got baited a few times when they can't afford to by Montreal. If that happens against Carolina, remember when they got under the cap skin and there was all the fights and the line brawls and everything going back just in April, a month ago, when these teams were playing, then Aho and Svechnikov and those dudes on the power play are going to absolutely take your lunch. So I worry about that. I'm always petrified of a goal, on the penalty kill from them as well, shorthanded, because they're that talented and they're able to, with Seth Jarvis, score shorthanded goals too. So for me, it's about how often are they even strength? How does Logan Thompson play? Because I do think special teams, they'll be at a disadvantage.
So the Caps have the longest odds of the teams remaining to win the Cup.
By the way, for the number one seed in the East, for the best team in the NHL in the regular season other than Winnipeg, mm-hmm. and far better in the first round than Winnipeg, who were down two goals with 3 minutes to go last night and should have been eliminated. And you're saying, and you're right, but you're just mentioning the numbers, the longest odds. They are getting zero respect right now. Zero.
Yeah, the longest odds in the Eastern Conference, tied for the worst odds. Again, every team remaining to win their conference. With Winnipeg, ironically. Both are plus 400.
Connor Hellebuck stunk in the first round. He was the best goalie in hockey the last 2 years, winning the Vezina. And they were lucky to get out of their series last night.
And then tied with Toronto is the worst odds to win their current series at plus 150. So somebody doesn't think much of Washington and their resume when it comes to putting this stuff together. Now, we had your buddy Adam Gold on earlier from Carolina, and he made a pretty good point that Florida is the best team on paper, or maybe playing the best right now of anybody. Who knows what happens if momentum carries over with these weird layoffs and everything else. I'll worry about Florida if when we get to play Florida. The challenge in front of them is Carolina, who's got the second best odds in the Eastern Conference to represent the conference and the third best odds overall to win the whole damn thing. So this Carolina club had their stumbles in the regular season, finished 12 points worse than the Capitals, basically 6 wins worse than they did. That's not insignificant. I mean, that's a major gap. And yet they're the heavy prohibitive favorites here to win this series.
Which I understand, I think, because of recent history. I mean, the Capitals have lost a lot of playoff games and a lot of playoff series over the last several years. You got to go back 7 years to find the last time they went on a run. And they just got out of the first round in 5 games. It was an overpowering 4-1 matchup with Montreal. But if you go back and you really pick nits and you go through those games, that was not I always talk about expected batting average or your Pythagorean win-loss based on differential, what you should be. That probably should have been a 6-game series, not a 5-game series. I think they were lucky to have gotten out of it in 5. You could say the same thing, though, again, about Carolina. They went to overtime. In fact, double overtime with the Devils in Game 5. They went to double overtime with the Devils in Game 3. They won both of those games. What if New Jersey just finishes either of those? Then they play 6. What if New Jersey wins both of those? Again, double overtime. They had chances in those games. Now, all of a sudden, you're talking about needing to go 7 or maybe even having been eliminated. So it's just interesting to me that Carolina scored fewer goals in the regular season, allowed more goals in the regular season, won less than the Capitals. When they met head-to-head, it was very comparable. Both teams got points in 2 of the 4 games. Then in the first round, the Caps were actually more decisively a winner. I agree that it's not the best matchup for Washington, and maybe that's all it is, but to me, the idea that Carolina is a prohibitive favorite, or that the Caps, maybe more importantly, the better point is, are just getting so
zero respect.
Disrespected, yeah. It is kind of silly to me. The Hurricanes came out in games 1 and 2 at home against the Devils. They waxed them. They outscored them 7-2. Then they went to New Jersey. They needed double overtime and lost that game and then got a 3-goal win and had to go to a game 5. But who's more impressive in the first round? Just take both teams' names out of it. The Caps played a lot less hockey and got it done faster. So I'm a little confused by this. If I had to pick the series, I think it goes 7. And I absolutely think Carolina could win the series in 7. I'll pick the Caps in 7. I think it's going to be excruciating. But I totally understand why someone would say Carolina wins the series. But the disrespect to the Capitals makes no sense.
I'm trying to put my finger on it here.
Right? I think it's still how they finish the season, too.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. So that's what I was going to bring up. So two final matchups in April, okay? One second game of a back, or no, I guess it wasn't a back-to-back, but the Caps didn't have much to play for and were listless, and then they tried to fight a bunch at the end. And then in the other, a 5-4 Capitals win in a shootout.
Yes.
I thought most of that game, kind of going back and trying to remember to refresh my matchup here.
That was the night of the Ovi celebration right after he broke the record on Long Island.
So Carolina, Washington had a good kind of middle part of the sandwich there, scoring three goals in the second period. But as I recall, Carolina was kind of good beginning and end of that game, forced overtime, Washington wins in a shootout. But so it wasn't as if Washington, you know, said, okay, now it's revenge time. Let's really hammer these guys to kick their butts 6 ways from Sunday. You know, Carolina handled them and was probably the better team for more time on that ice that night. But does that mean they should be dominant favorites in the postseason? Not to me, but I'm just trying to put my finger on it. I'm trying to figure it out.
Yeah, so the only time that they've really been handled with any ease by Carolina was a back-to-back. You'd said that, but kind of correct yourself. They went to Carolina in that game that made you mad where everyone got into all the fights.
Yeah.
And the season's already wrapped up. You got nothing to play for, and they played the previous night. I don't care that much about that game. I'm going to be honest with you. Like, that is not that revealing or telling of a game. At the end of the regular season, when, you know, that you're in Ovi hunting record mode and you're on the second night of a back-to-back trying to make sure guys are fresh for the playoffs, I don't think that game's telling at all. It is more telling to me when they met and the Caps won in the shootout. Now, to your point, the Caps were down 2-1 after 20 in that game. They did lead 4-2 going into the third period and then collapsed to even have the game go to the shootout. But how much do you want to focus on the regular season? I don't know. I mean, that's up to everybody. I think at their best, the Caps ceiling is better than the Hurricane ceiling. I really believe that. I think we just saw, what is the point of the regular season? I mean, we just saw the two teams play for months and months and months, and Washington's best was better than Carolina's best. Now, do you get your A game in those games? I don't know. Can Logan Thompson be spectacular? He's got to be. I thought defensively, the Alexiev-Van Riemsdyk pair, the third pair of the Caps defenders, was way better than anticipated. Are they going to be able to play at that level again, or do they get exposed? That's going to be fascinating. I certainly think when you go to Carolina, there's some bad matchups waiting there in that regard. John Carlson, I think, has to have a much better series. I don't know if he's completely healthy, but if he is, I'd like to see him with some more rest going into this series, play just a cleaner game in his own end and look a little bit more spry as a skater. But I liked what I saw from Chychrun and Matt Roy, especially, and Van Riemsdyk, who we had on the show a few days ago in that first round. But I feel good. I'm past the point now where I'm confident. There's not a series they could have where I'm confident going in. That's over now.
Yeah. I also, would you think that would apply to nearly any fan base? I mean, it's hockey playoffs, right? That's kind of the point, right?
If they are sane and if they have, you know,
experienced anything,
if they've ever lived this, I mean, how could you possibly feel good? Mm-hmm. Like, Carolina fans are not giddy about this matchup. No chance. It's 6 or 7 games. Who gets the bounces? Let's play hockey. But they got a great shot. I cannot believe how much disrespect there is for the Capitals, is all. If you guys want to weigh in on why you think that might be, 800-636-1067. The huge news in town today, the NFL draft is coming to the nation's capital. It'll be on the National Mall in 2027. We'll get back into that next. Danny just went into the hot take room and came out swinging. He just told us during the break that he's got the Golden State Warriors going to the Western Conference Finals.
I think they might go to the Conference Finals.
The NBA Finals, he said.
I said Conference Finals.
You said the Finals.
I said Conference Finals. Derek, you heard me?
You did not say the word Conference. I botched it and said the word Conference. That would just mean they win one series.
Yeah, I think they win one more series. I think they might beat the Timberwolves.
To be fair, it was Toby that said the Finals.
Danny didn't say that?
No. Danny said Conference Finals. Okay, Toby said the Finals.
All right. Then I misheard. So then it's really not that hot then. You're just saying they could win their next round.
Yeah. Because everybody's going, Minnesota, wow, they're incredible. I don't think they're as good as they were last year, even, or maybe a couple years ago. They just beat a Lakers team that was deeply flawed. And we just realized how flawed they are. But I think Golden State's got one more round in them.
Timberwolves are really good. I think the Warriors, had this series with Houston only gone 5 or 6, would have been able to top Minnesota in advance. I don't have them doing that now. I think they got worn down. And the other problem for the Warriors is they got two guys that can score. That's the list. It's Jimmy Butler and it's Steph Curry and nobody else. So if those guys are not combining for 70 points or something like that, then they're scoring in the low 100s, which might work against Houston, who's the worst half-court offensive
team
in the playoffs. But I don't think it's going to work against Anthony Edwards in Minnesota. Not to mention, they got rim protectors and rim defenders, and they can go super big, which will give the Warriors fits. That's a terrible matchup for them.
It's not a good one. Minnesota's unique, and like everyone else is like, I want more wings. They're like, no, we can play some bigs here and there and bother you a little bit.
Could this be the Anthony Edwards? You can't call it a coming out party because it's been years now.
He's kind of had some.
But yeah. If he ends up going on a run
where he takes LeBron out and Luka takes out Steph Curry.
The next boss is Steph Curry. And then they would get to the conference final. And who would they play in that matchup? Let's say it's
OKC probably.
Right. And so you knock out like an MVP candidate and Gilgeous Alexander. And the next thing you know, like he's the last man standing. That would be his moment to be the guy, which he hasn't really been.
Yeah.
I don't think they'll do that, but they could. I think they're going to be in the conference final.
Yeah, he's been viewed on deck for a while, like the heir apparent at certain points. But, you know, LeBron's still putting up, 26-8-8 as the guy my age. So it may be a torch passing time.
So make your prediction. Put your name on it.
OKC and Golden State play for the conference championship. And OKC wins it.
Size for the Thunder, by the way.
Yeah, they're fun.
That's the Wizards blueprint. Will Dawkins comes over. He's trying to recreate it. Now, I don't know where my SGA is at this point.
I don't even see my Jalen Williams at this point.
I'm still waiting on a couple of these things. We'll keep waiting.
I'll take either Jalen Williams, by the way. They got two.
Here's what the Wizards are super psyched about. I know this from just talking to a couple of people in the last couple of months over there. They don't only think that this draft is better than last year, but they think next year's draft is way better than this one. And so the idea is be patient for another year. Because I think the point is they're going to try to stink up the joint again one more time.
Go for it.
So that they can run it back and add as many picks as possible in a deep draft next year. But after two draft classes, you spend a little money and add a piece. At that point, hopefully, God willing, they hit the lottery this year. Cooper Flagg with Alex Saar. You got some young talent with Bub and Keshawn George. And then you add 3 or 4 more picks. I think they feel like whatever that looks like is not that far away. Maybe you're one money grab in free agency away from being a really good team.
Yeah, you could have a bunch of really enticing, fun, young pieces. I mean, you look at Orlando. Not that that's anything anybody should be thrilled about at this point, but they have a couple really nice young players. If they could draw a free agent there that fit them well, you'd go, I don't want to see that team. I want to first be the I don't want to see that team. Then maybe you could ascend to do what Oklahoma City's doing.
Did you see that the Pacers pulled off a huge game one upset?
Yeah, they looked good.
And they did it without Mr. Halliburton in the crowd. How is that even possible?
How do they even know what to do?
Although I guess it was in Cleveland, so I don't know if he would have been there anyway. But a 9-point win last night at the Cavs for the 4-seed Pacers, who were heavy underdogs, 121-112. Speaking of coming out parties, other than the in-season tournament, Tyrese Halliburton, have yourself some fun. 22 points, 13 assists for him. All 5 of their starters in double figures last night. Naismith and Siakam both had 17 points. Pacers look like they could be frisky and give the Cavs a little series here.
This is playoff Miles Turner, too. I mean, the idea of him is always very sexy. Regular season, it's like underproduction. But when it comes to matchups, more half-court type stuff in the playoffs, he's wildly effective as shot blocker, 3-point shooter.
Do we think there's any chance with another series starting in the East where nobody's giving the underdog a chance? The Celtics have any problems with the Knicks?
I think the Celtics have been playing with their food for months since winning the title. So the Knicks are tough as nails, obviously, the Villanova kids, and they'll win a game or two, but I think Boston's going to the finals again.
All right, we promised you the last chance to win Caps tickets today at the end of the hour. So right now, caller number 9. This is for tomorrow's game 1 against the Hurricanes in round 2. We're giving away a pair of Caps tickets, 800-636-1067. Enjoy the game on your pals, G&D. For tickets, if you're going to the game, you want tickets or more event information, go to thefandc.com. Speaking of events, we are going to be discussing the NFL draft in the nation's capital. We'll do that next on Grant and Danny.